listening to TBR Radio, brought to you by the Barge Review. Now, the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show with your host, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock.
Hello, everybody. And before I bring up today's guest, I want to thank Hugh for his recent donation. Thank you for that. And today's guest will be familiar to a lot of you, and the website certainly will. The website is big-lies.org. That's big-lies.org, fighting lies since 1997. And I'm delighted to have the author of that site on the show, Ray West. I'm going to bring him up right now. Ray, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm fine, thanks.
Excellent. Well, it's great to have you on the show. Fellow Brit as well. So we've had a good chat before we're recording the show. And as it's your first time on the show, could you go through your background or the background of biglies.org in as little as greater detail as you would like? And then once you've done that, I understand you've got some topics that you'd like to raise that people can also look up on your site. So hand over to you for that, please.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I think my background is probably rather different from many people here. My first political awareness really was the Vietnam War, and I took great interest in Bertrand Russell, and I've come to think a lot less highly of him than I did then. But that was the spark, really, the starting point. And between then and now, I got involved with computers when they were new, microcomputers. In fact, I wrote some books on them, and so I'm quite familiar with, you know, all this stuff like HTML and ASCII coding and what have you. And I did put up, when internet was invented, I date internet from about 1997. It's just before this century. Oh dear, I've gone blank here.
Your website, biglies.org. How about come about?
Yeah, I started off as ratowest.org in an egocentric way, but I morphed it into biglies.org, and it includes material on science, which is quite unusual. Most sort of social scientists have no idea about defects in science. And at that time, I lived in London, and I did quite a lot of taping of people. As the mood occurred to me, and of course London, the advantage of living in a small country really is that you can get to this kind of stuff. And anyway, I put Big Lies up in, I think it was 1997, which is 20 years ago, in fact. And I got interested in this Jewish thing. In fact, I contacted several people on both sides, and the main, most important one turned out to be David Irving. And my site it kept going for about 3 or 4 years, but then there was a long delay. I got disheartened and stopped it, as it's because the host stopped doing internet sites, which is a bit of a shame. So although it sounds as though my thing's been there for a long time, there was about a 10-year gap. And in fact, so, you know, I don't get too worried if the thing goes down for an hour or two. And anyway, now I've got this site, and I keep adding to it. And as you can see, it's HTML style, very fast compared to most because of the lack of graphics and so on. And that's where I am now, really. That's really the brief outline, which will do for the moment.
Excellent.
And I've got...
Sorry, just to jump in, when you mentioned taping people, what you mean here is you actually used to go to, you know, lots of different talks and what have you, and you make sure you have a tape recorder with you so that you wouldn't miss anything rather than go something and, oh, he said that. And so that's quite a good idea, really, if people go to conferences and what have you, especially now it's easier, you can record on phones and things like that, so that things that are said aren't missed.
Yes, that's right. I met some quite interesting ones which were purely by chance, really. There was, for example, a chap called Mason who did a talk on global warming, which debunked it. Actually, he was a very good chap. And other speakers. And another very good one was a chap called Harold Hillman, who was a sort of revolutionary type concerned with errors in biology. He was quite important to me. There's some stuff about this on my website in the science section. And later on, that morphed into the nuke thing, which was not my idea. The nuke lies thing was put up first by Jesse Waugh, and he stamped on it after a year. I think he found it too Jew aware, but I was able to reconstruct it, and that's part of my site now. That's nuclize.org. If you're interested in the truth about nukes, which in my view are almost entirely a fake, that's the thing to look at. But let me get on to the... I've got some prepared notes here. I've got six separate sections. I'm hoping that we can do them in about 10 minutes each. The first thing I want to make... Now, the first point I want to make is really quite an important one, which a lot of people still haven't grasped, haven't understood, which is that Jews have a different model of a nation. I'll repeat that. They have a different model of a nation. Most people think, and understandably, that a nation is geographically bounded and is rooted in sort of people who live in a place and have lived there for centuries, generations, and what have you. But the Jewish model of a nation is different. They want, their idea of a nation is to be spread out over as a sort of layer, preferably on top of other nations, preferably successful ones. They target successful ones and move into them and use their networking system to do everything they can to their own benefit. So the important thing is, let me give some examples. These are all taken from YouTube comments, or most of them. And it's a quiz here. It's a sort of game, spot the Jew, spot the Jewish interest, you know, spot the way Jews keep these things hidden. And later on I'll go into the genetics of it, why this has happened and what possibly you can do about it. Here's an example. This is actually Galloway. George Galloway said that US and America are the biggest rogue states in the world, you know, in an emphatic tone of voice. And the comment here is, the comment I've got is, it's not exactly US and America, it's the Jewish policies that are the rogue policies. They look as though they're American, they hide as American, and they hide as British. I should have said it's UK and America are the biggest rogue states in the world. I'm not speaking very fluently here.
No, it's not a problem. Don't worry. Sorry, okay. Just take your time, and it's not an issue. It's
Okay.
Go ahead.
There's another one here. I've seen this quite often happen. The people are discussing, puzzling over US policy in Vietnam. What was going on there? What about the Gulf of Tonkin, this sort of thing? And my reply is, it's not American policy, it's Jewish policy. There were Kissinger, for example, who's incredibly still there, and Johnson, who was a Texas Jew. The link of Texas with Jews is not very well known, but that's another thing. It's not the US policy, it was not US policy, it was Jewish policy. And if we go back in time here, we've got the Opium Wars, you know. It was the UK and French troops went in and destroyed the Summer Palace. It was an incredible act of vandalism. But again, you see, it wasn't actually either British or French policy. It was for Jews. It was to support Jews so that they could go for the Opium War and profit from that. I don't know whether the profit was enough to justify the whole of Britain doing it. I suspect not. This is a thing to watch for. If you're separating out Jewish interests, if all the money goes to them, then, which is, you know, what they're after, which is characteristic. Look for that. Look for blame being misattributed. There's something similar in the Congo. The Belgian Congo was a well-known issue in Britain about 1900. The, you know, mass kind of killing of blacks there. But again, that was, I'd say, almost certainly a Jewish thing, the Jews getting their hands on supplies of rubber, that sort of thing. And we get the same with politics. You know, what is the Republican Party's policy? Well, it doesn't matter what the issue is, really. It's not the Republican Party that's doing it. It's a Jewish policy. They're following Jewish policies, right? And same with the EU. You get these people puzzling over EU policy. What's happening here? What's happening? What is Merkel doing? And, of course, Merkel is a Polish Jew. And most of the EU policies are Jewish. And I'm personally in favour of a united Europe, or at least a Europe in which common issues are discussed. It's an obvious thing to do. It's an important thing to do. It should be done. But the EU at the moment is, of course, run by Jews, just like the USA is. And here's another example, the BBC. They have all these policies, for example, what they call blonking, which means including blacks in the scenery all the time. And they have other policies like suppressing the names of black criminals, however, you know, whatever they do, they suppress it. And their other policies, repetition of lies about the Holocaust and not mentioning the truth about 9/11. And it's not exactly BBC policy, it's Jewish policy. The BBC is run by Jews, has been really since it was established in 1920. So again, you see, it's not, you have to sort these things out. And it happens in all kinds of other fields as well, although a lot of people don't realise it. For example, promotion of homosexuality is a Jewish policy to, you know, to weaken people, to make them effeminate, to disease them with anal sex, that kind of thing. But a lot of people don't realise that. They think it's sort of natural that you should have sudden campaigns for so-called same-sex marriage all around the world. You know, they think it's a coincidence, it happens everywhere. And there's a similar thing with, for example, family law, divorce, paedophilia. They're all Jewish policies. And, you know, I spoke to, there's a chap called Buchanan who founded a party called Justice for Men and Boys, J4MP. This is in Britain. And he can't understand this, you know, so, I mean, he'll get nowhere. I don't know if he would, if he acknowledged that it was a Jewish thing. But so all his comments really are kind of rather pointless. It's quite funny to see him being interviewed by these you know, media women who are sort of lightweights working through their little sheets. There's other things like, in addition to things like anal sex and diseases and the support for obesity, you get these ridiculous TV things with absurdly fat women usually. And the heroin from Pakistan, all these are Jewish policies designed to weaken the West, particularly whites. Whites are the premier target for Jews. And similarly with reading newspapers, a lot of people just don't realize, because of the control of the media, that where there's mass hysteria, it's usually Jews doing it. You know, for example, in 9/11, you had all these actors reading out their prepared scripts about being attacked by Muslims. It's all bullshit. They're just following their Jewish agenda. And I mean, a lot of people are coming to know this, and I'm just trying to, you know, going through all this rather boringly, is to try and underline it and make people realise it. There's a similar thing with blacks in the U.S. You know, the U.S. media tells lies routinely about the U.S. police shooting blacks, and they use it as to stir up blacks. And it's partly, I think, as I'll say later, it's partly a planned thing. It's to enable blacks to riot and damage districts and so on. But again, it's a Jewish thing, and we can look at this again at the Irish. You know, the Ireland in. From about 1900 up to 1914, there was a Jewish movement which compares in many ways with Jews in Russia and Poland and so on. They were continually assassinating people and killing them off and shipping arms around and so on. So Ireland is a really quite a tragic case where you've got a little country which was exploited by Jews, and also their collaborators like the so-called intelligence services, all this stuff. And in fact, that remains true in the USA now. It's been pointed out that it's not just Jews in dominating the US, but there are some Irish ones as well. And of course, these are just patsies used by Jews. And it's another example here. Why is somebody who says, well, why should de-skilling and de-industrialization and export of jobs be a US policy? What's the point of that? And again, you see, it's not. It's a Jewish policy partly to weaken the U.S., partly to presumably to make money out of cheap Chinese labor and so on. And another thing is that you have free thinkers, people like Richard Dawkins. They're anti-God, but they're not as bad as they used to be. They tend not to mention Islam, and they certainly never mention Judaism. And, of course, the Jewish policy is to be anti-Christian, but they don't. They keep quiet about all the filthy aspects of Jews. So, again, you know, you look for the Jew there, spot the Jew, search for the Jew. And but, of course, whenever they have to keep things concealed, and you get crypto-Jews. There's a whole sort of industry of people pretending not to be Jews for years and years. And but, of course, if you have that sort of thing, these collaborators can become independent. And I'm sure that the UN is an example. The UN was founded by on Jewish lines, all the sort of texts and so on were written by Jews. But of course, the UN now is getting a bit sort of uppity. You know, some of them are pro-Palestine, for example. So, and that's an interesting thing because, of course, it's not just a matter of Jews. As people point out, there are all their collaborators, such as Freemasons are a good example. And more recently, Common Purpose, I think, is a Jewish thing because Freemasonry is somewhat out of date. You know, Freemasons used to target local businesses, but local businesses are less important than they used to be. There's so much big industry that they go more for bureaucrats now, sort of petty people who like to be told they're leaders. So, and that's the explanation, in my view, for Common Purpose. Anyway, let's go. Here's another example here. Somebody says in a comment, Jewish Bolshevism failed spectacularly on a planetary scale, didn't it? So that's what this sort of the question is. And you see, from the white point of view, that's, you know, it failed. It didn't get very far. But from the Jewish viewpoint, you know, Russia was ruined. Millions of Russians were murdered, raped, enslaved, generally killed off by slow methods as well. So from the Jewish point of view, it was a tremendous success. You have to look at it through their views.
Also, Ray, I mean, the way I look at it is that the system that we live under today is communism, this democracy, because what they realised through communism is whilst they could get away with what they wanted within Russia, there was people speaking out about it around the world. You know, they don't have any ability to choose their government. So they said, well, let's give people a two-party system then, but we control both parties. So you either vote for the Labour Friends of Israel or the Conservative Friends of Israel, and then you still get Jewish policy, but you think you've got choice.
Yep, I think that's absolutely right. I'll get onto the British Constitution a bit later. That's something that I got interested in, mainly as a result of looking through old books, actually. There are other things here, like, for example, the Armenian genocide. Why is that kind of kept secret or kept under wraps? And again, it turns out to be because Turkey was actually run by a clique of Jews, Dolmy Jews. And in fact, it occurred to me just literally yesterday that there were Bulgarian atrocities. Bulgaria was a victim of Turks. This was in 1876, but nobody ever mentions that as another aspect of Judaism. And here's another couple of things here, which are just people puzzling over things. Somebody here says, isn't it weird that the truth is considered controversial these days? And of course, if you understand Jews, they tell lies all the time. So it's not controversial. They want to suppress the truth. Fair enough. Somebody else here said, oh, look, bringing in these misfits in 1948 was our biggest mistake ever. And of course, it wasn't our mistake. It was never voted for. It was a Jewish policy to flood immigrants in. In fact, that's part of the motive for, in my view, for things like pensions and benefits. It wasn't really aimed at whites. It was aimed at the people they wanted to ship over or who had already been shipped over. And here's another one. So somebody says, oh, I can't believe what Europe and Britain have done to themselves. See, it wasn't a self-imposed policy. It was a Jewish thing with their collaborators. So there are all these examples of people who haven't understood this, you know. And here are a few more. BBC budget. When the BBC does its annual, you know, there's an announcement typically by a Jewish Chancellor of the Exchequer, you know, and all the BBC talk about is the, you know, tax on tobacco or beer or something. They never mention the government debt going up and interest payments being made to Jews. It's the same thing, you see. It's the budget is controlled by Jews, and they just mention the bits they want, which excludes everything important. And there are things here. Patreon, notice that Patreon is run by a Jew, and they removed fundraising for some sites. But of course, they don't take out, you know, black hate sites or European hate sites. And again, it's Jewish policy. Jewish policy is to support black hate sites and any sites that hate aspects of Europe, not just Britain, of course, there's France, Italy, the Scandinavian countries, and so on.
Well, the Barbara Lerma Spector speech, I mean, that perfectly sums up what they're up to, and she openly admits it. And, of course, that was made for Israeli television. It wasn't supposed to be seen by us, but it got out there and went viral in our community.
It went viral, that's right. They tried to close it down on copyright grounds, didn't they? But with the way things can spread now, you could get her speech just on a little USB stick, can't you? So that's right, yeah. And there's other things here. Feminists is another interesting example of the way Jews operate. They for example, they want divorced women to have complete control over children, that sort of thing. And you get these people puzzling over that. Why do they do this? And, you know, it's Jewish policy. They want to damage white families. And, you know, it's been quite successful. And the other feminists, a lot of the feminist writers are, of course, Jewish as well. I mean, I think Germaine Greer probably is. He's got a Jewish name. And all their writings are just, they might have been written by the same person. It's just a kind of collection of stuff on white males. And here's another one. Hi, there's somebody here puzzling over Austrian, or so-called Austrian economics, Hayek being a, you know, good example. Why are they, you know, why are they so, quotes, right-wing? And, of course, it's not Austrian economics, it's Jewish. It's only Jews call their race-based supremacy left. It's not left in the traditional sense of being... spreading out the benefits of industrialism over large numbers of people.
Well, have you noticed the way that they... Sorry to jump in, Ray, but the way that they've hijacked the left, you just hit the nail on the head there. It's not left into, you know, spreading the wealth amongst poor people. What they've bolted on to being left-wing is, oh, you also have to support immigration. So that's actually to your detriment, because if you're a working person and they're bringing immigrants in, then they're going to take your jobs. They've also tagged onto the left... promotion of homosexuality, promotion of race mixing, that again is all an attack on traditional family. It amazes me how they basically say, if you're on the left, you have to support all these things too. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, it's a typical thing. In fact, the Labour Party was, there's a good book which I'm about to put up, which I've kind of reformatted so it's more readable. But the Labour Party had these policies ever since it was started. I think the Labour Party was actually essentially a Jewish party. They founded a whole party from scratch and sort of ignored liberals, traditional liberalism. Let me just segue, as they say in America, into genetics. Let's look at the sort of biology of people. And the starting point here is actually, I've got this idea from Bertrand Russell on impulses. You know, if you look at, for example, children, they sort of jump around and run around and things. It's not because they think it's a good thing to do. It's just an impulse. And although the mechanism is not known, nobody knows how the brain works, as far as I know. And of course, it must be fairly simple. It must be mediated by you know, biochemistry, basically. It's a simple kind of thing which can be sort of perverted in various ways, but this is part of the sort of human condition. You've got your genetics. And I want to... Let's start with Jews here. There's this... if you look at the background of Jews, there's the lack of
empathy.
I was starting at something more primitive than that. The territory, if you're in an area which has endless strips of sand, endless sand, or for that matter, endless grassland, you know, steppes, that kind of thing. There's no natural barriers. If you look at Europe, if you look at the map of Europe, it's split up into all kinds of different areas which are fairly defensible, without being cut off from each other. They're, you know, they've got mountain ranges between them, which to this day demarcate boundaries of things like Switzerland, you know, Italy, France and Spain and so on, and Ireland, England, and the countries. It used to be difficult to get to the northern countries because of ice. You know, they didn't have motorways and so on. But with Jews, there's this vast feeling that you've got this vast area, and the natural tendency is to sort of have as many kids as possible and kill off everybody you can do. And I think that's a genetic thing which is important in Jews. And it's what's called, it's generally called parasitism. I've got quite a nice note on parasitism in one of my pieces online. It's in the Guide for the Perplexed about Jews, and it goes into this detail that civilization started, or was believed to have started, in the Middle East, in Sumer, Akkad, that kind of thing, and Egypt, and Jews kind of developed as a new line, as secret and aggressive. They were kind of aggressive. They were in effect there. Top of the pecking order in mentality, but they had to keep it secret. They're sort of crypto leaders, and all of their genetics is designed to mislead people, to disguise them. And in fact, I think, I don't know if you'd agree with this, the idea that in the beginning was the word, it's a Jewish thing. If the natural way, the Western way, so to speak, if you want to predict or project yourself back to the beginning of time, you naturally think the first thing must have been food, or animals, or maybe housing, timber, water, something like that. You think it in terms of objects. Yeah, that's what was there at the start, presumably it must have been. But the Jewish attitude is that the beginning was the word, and that's a kind of abstract thing. It means, they don't mean the word, they mean propaganda and specialization in deceit and lies. See, in the beginning was the word. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Well, their Talmud certainly goes down that line. I mean, they even say anyone who teaches the Talmud to a not any Jew that makes the Talmud available or teaches the Talmud to a non-Jew is to be killed. They don't want any of their secrets revealed, and what they're really about revealed. And that just goes to show the increased censorship that you mentioned earlier that we're seeing today, because people are waking up. And I think that the all this immigration they're pushing us, and all the other Jewish destabilization techniques that you ran through, it's being aimed at the white race, because we're the only people that have ever kicked them out of countries. Over 100 times in their history, they've been kicked out of white nations. And so I understand that there's a report that's been discussed that straight after the Second World War, they made the decision that, right, we're going to have to wipe out all the white people, and they've got onto that ever since. And then you see how, much our percentage of the world's population has dwindled since that point.
I think that's right, and that's certainly correct in detail. But of course, they need collaborators to go along with it. You get these people like sort of Tony Blair or Harold Wilson, this kind of stuff. Anyway, so they specialise in doing that, and they completely ruined these places up to Egypt by just. This is what makes me think it's genetic. Actually, they don't seem to have any idea of when to stop. They just keep going. I think it's an impulse which is built into them that whatever you say, whatever they think about things, they're going to just keep going. And it's a parasitism. If you watch things like, cuckoos, videos of cuckoos, or things like there's an emerald beetle, which is specialised, it's evolved to attack cockroaches. And, they don't need lessons to do it. They don't have a detailed instruction book on how to, what nests you should lay eggs in. They just do it. And I think, arguably, that's a Jewish deep-seated thing, which is mediated by their biochemistry. And, of course, it goes along with having high incidence of things like schizophrenia and what have you. And one of the things they do, what they're good at, is identify possible splits. They look at any group and they'll find a split. At least I don't think they think about it. I think they just look and see. If you find Protestants and Catholics, or Germans and French, or you can name it Britons and Americans, they play them up. And they, in my view, they generally don't seem to understand truth. They have they've got no idea that science was and is difficult. They just think in terms of money. They think they can sort of buy experts, even if experts like to be thin on the ground as a result of it. I think it's the same psychology as blacks. Blacks are told that that they seem to think that everything was invented by blacks. They seem to think that, for example, plumbing was stolen from Africans. Absolute ridiculous nonsense. But It's a thought, a way of thinking that comes easily to Jews. And when they're given some sort of creative position, they can't handle it. I mean, there are no battery chickens in the USSR, for example, which might have seemed an ideal way for Jews to, you know, to kind of exploit the USSR. And in the USSR, all they talked about was their politics, Jewish politics, where and things like electricity supply and, you know, things like building was all done by foreigners who were essentially paid by Jewish money, supplied by Jews from the US and Germany and so on.
You mentioned Harold Wilson and Tony Blair, and I looked up the Charlemagne Prize, which of course is... you know, relating to people imposed the policies of Richard van Coudenhove-Kalergi, the Coudenhove-Kalergi plan. Tony Blair got the prize in 99. Roy Jenkins got the prize. So Wilson didn't get it, but it says on the Wikipedia page, you and I both know about Roy Jenkins, but it said he served in several major posts in Harold Wilson's first government. Here we go. As Home Secretary in 1965-67, he sought to build what he described as a civilised society with measures such as the effective abolition in Britain of both capital punishment and theatre censorship, the decriminalisation of homosexuality, relaxing of divorce law, suspension of birching and the liberalisation of abortion law. Yeah. So there's a few things that you've gone through earlier.
Yes, that's exactly right. There's another instinctive theory I've got about Jews, which is that group lying is an instinct. You know how sheep, if you've got a flock of sheep, they all sort of stick together, you know? Or the fact that I believe there's some genetic version which causes sheep not to, they sort of scatter. Now, most people, I think, because they feel part of the community, they're not very happy about lying. But I think group lying is instinctive with Jews. And if you think back before things like... you know, notebooks and video recordings and all this kind of stuff, there was, you really had people's opinions on what really happened. And if a group would stick together telling lies, they must have got away with an awful lot of stuff just by being persuasive or being insistent. Do you want to tell me?
What I would say on that point is the Jews promote diversity for us, but they encourage racial cohesion for themselves. Because they, as the way you just described is exactly the way that they work. They operate as a single being, and they will reinforce the lies of other Jews because their only loyalty is to other Jews. And that's part of their plan.
Okay, I'm saying that's possibly instinctive or genetic. You sometimes see these videos now with, do you remember that one of the Melissa Click, this kind of thing? You get these Jews and they get in some sort of fight or something. And they all say, oh, let him go, let him go, let him go. Or, you know, he hit me first, this kind of thing. And then the cop says, oh, well, we've got videos. And they look completely baffled and troubled by it, because their instinctive reaction is that if they all say something, then people are going to go along with it. Do you take the point I'm making? If you watch some of these videos, there are a lot of them now about this recent Trump thing, because the official Jew view is supposedly that they're anti-Trump, which of course it may be an act, but you get these rather laughable videos where, you know, the cop takes some bloke down, and all the onlooking Jews say, you know, let him go, he didn't hit him or something. And the fact that there's evidence is something anti-instinctive. Jews just cannot get past this idea that if they all say lies together, that that's going to work, you know.
Well, it's like the Holocaust. I mean, you know, exactly. they don't. What they do is they criminalise people talking about it, and that's how they cover up their lies. So they don't allow debate. And what they're trying to do now with closing down YouTubes and results on Google search engine and all this, because when they took all those books down from Amazon, mine included, they could have if there was, there's such laws in all our countries of libel and slander, and so they could have taken people to court and said, right, this is libellous, this is not true. But they don't want to do that because they know it's true, and so, and also they don't want to do it because they don't want to draw attention to it. So what do? They get Amazon to boycott stuff. And then they go to the US Congress and Senate with a bill that won't allow people to boycott them. You know, these people are insane. They are just schizophrenic. And they don't have any shame whatsoever. And as you say, they stick together as a group. And the reason that they've got no effective opposition amongst us is because all the things you went through earlier that they've used to destabilise us as a race has lost our social and racial cohesion whilst they maintain their own. They know that a strong racial society is something that they couldn't infiltrate. That's why they have to destroy all these white societies, because then we're ripe for the pickings.
Yeah, I think that's true, but I'm just getting at the genetic basis of it. You know, I think it's an instinct with them. Somebody like Lipstadt, you know, she announces that the so-called Holocaust is the most documented event in history. She'll probably go to her grave telling lies, because it's instinctive with her. And actually, there's another thing which I mentioned in one of my pieces online. It's in my Truth About Jews. I've got some articles on Jews which suddenly got popular, re-revisionist articles on Jews. I put up quite a long piece recently, and I suggested there are some really weird things here. I mean, for example, this idea of ugliness. You see these really hideous women. I mean, in Britain's got these ones who are, well, hideous. And I wouldn't be surprised that's part of group cohesion, because if you've got a lot of people who they're told, you know, you've got to, this is the Jewish thing to do, is marry this bloke or this woman, and they're ugly, it sort of reinforces it. Do you see what I mean? It means that they're willing to suppress their sort of natural, what I presume are natural feelings of revulsion. That's not a very popular thing.
Essentially, when you look at some of these Jewish women, you know, these actresses and stuff like that, when they get older, they do have that sort of evil look about them. You know, the sort of faces and things like that. It's almost like as they get older, they really do have that, you know, serpentine look. And I think that's
witch-like.
Yeah. You know, and some of the people you mentioned, when you talk about feminism and, you know, Gloria Allred and Betty Friedan and all these prominent Jews involved in it. I mean, there's a long list of them. I've only got a couple there that come to mind. But it's insidious behind everything. And, I mean, my own feeling is it's a scriptural... I mean, Jesus Christ in the Bible said, ye are of your father the devil. And when you cross-reference that passage in John chapter 8... With the book of Mark, I believe, chapter 7. And it says that he was talking to the Pharisees and all the Jews. And so I think that all the Jews today are descended from those Jews. And they're just, they are here to do evil. And they're here to do as much as they possibly can. And they see that they've got a job on, and that's to kill off white people, because white people are the people who have historically done them the most harm. In their
eyes. Amalek idea, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's in their eyes, because, you see, their attitude is what's mine is mine and what's yours is mine. So they can't understand how they can't come to our country, subvert it, take all the wealth into their hands, make us work as slaves for them. They don't they don't comprehend why we would object to that. Because to their mind, you know, they have a right to do that because their Talmud says it. And so if someone was to speak up and say you can't do that, they'd be like, well, our Talmud says we can. You're our slaves. You used to look at all these prominent rabbis in Israel, that all these quotes by so many of them, you know, the goyim are like cattle and they're here to be our slaves and all this garbage that they come out with. And so the best, if you really want to deal with Jews, is you just put them in their own area and let them parasite off each other. And in the end, you'll be only left with a handful, because they'll just be picking each other off then. That's why Jews, you get them in every country, because they say in their Talmud that if a Jew is fleecing a Christian or whatever.
And it's okay. Then,
yeah, well, they say another Jew's not allowed to fleece the same one until one Jew's finished with them. And so they go from place to place to place, country to country to country, and they go to all different areas in these countries so they can have their little group of people that they can parasite off.
Yeah, that's true enough. There's another point which nobody ever seems to mention, which is how easy it is to, you know, it just makes decisions simple, you know. And we're here, we're thinking about what's the best thing to do, what should we, what rights should we give these people, that people, and, you know, is this a good thing, is that a bad thing, you know, should there be a legal system? But with the Jewish thing, it's just so easy, you know. If they ask, well, you know, you can murder all these Vietnamese and use them as prostitutes and stuff, and their answer is, well, do we make money out of it? Yeah, we do. Oh, right, so you do it. It does make for simplicity of judgments, you know. Do you take the point? I mean, Churchill is obviously, he was a patsy, who's a half-Jew, and it's an easy decision to make. He just wants Germany sort of bombed, you know, and preferably a lot of white English people killed off as well. But it's just so easy, it's so simple, whereas you know, in the West, we've got all this kind of problem of wondering about what's the right thing to do and so on. Yeah, let's look at the genetics now of whites, which is kind of ignored or understated. There are various ideas here which I've got. One is just this business about being geographically split up, which makes defense easy, so you can pay attention to things which are not specifically just power related and to do with murdering people and stuff. And I take it, you see what I mean about that? Europe is, if you look at the world map, Europe is abnormal in being, it's the only country in the world with very definitive subdivisions, apart possibly from parts of Asia. There are some differences. I mean, Japan in some ways is comparable to Britain, and Korea in some ways resembles Italy. But anyway, the point I want to go here is another thing, which is to do with having dark nights in winter. You know, I mean, like in Britain here, we're not incredibly far north, but the nights are still twice as long as the day in winter. And that needs to, you have to have people who can sort of concentrate on things and specialize on things and carry out hobbies. I mean, if you're a chess player or something, it's adapted more to the winter nights than it is to the equator. And I think specialization and concentration is a characteristic of whites, although it does have its drawbacks. I mean, if you look at some of the hobbies that people have, the whites have, you know, they have things like, for example, they might want to grow the biggest marrow in their town. It sounds, on a rational basis, it's pretty ludicrous. There's no point doing that. Or if you look at tennis professionals, they spend, I mean, we normal people, you know, you watch Wimbledon once a year or something, but these people play tennis all year round, you know. And you get, when, for example, wooden shipbuilding was an important thing, there must have been people who spent their whole lives carefully shaping beams and doing this sort of thing. And if you look at people today with, for example, the people who tend steam engines, you know, which of course were high technology a couple of centuries ago, they're all whites. You know, they enjoy the sort of the oil and steam feeling and the hot atmosphere and stuff. And I think that's was essential for the growth of science. You had to have people who are somewhat individualistic. And in fact, if you look at IQ, that's a kind of conforms to that as a cheap way of testing people. It's essentially a kind of employee thing. It tests whether they can do useful pencil and paper things like, you know, reading and writing and calculating. And there's spatial tests, you know, so you might be good as an architect or something. But a JQ questionnaire would deal with, you know, the best, like the Talmud, when's the best place for discreet murder, or what fraud should you go in for, and so on. And I think whites are somewhat naive in the sense they tend to be, they tend to have this concentration. There's an easy tendency for them to sort of waste their lives on stuff.
Well, I think sorry to jump in. It's the education. I mean, you just highlighted all these different things. You know, my education is better than the generation after me, and your education will be better than my education, because the education where you learn how to, you know, do mathematics, these days they're basically just given a calculator. And also, it's that they're just, all their education is about is diversity and propaganda. And as each generation has passed, they've had more and more control of the educational system, and they've got rid of anything that we can use to make us individuals, to allow us to think independently. And it's all about, you can't say this, you can't say that, this person's feelings, that person's feelings, what have you. You know, and it's just a nonsense. So that's another thing that they've done to us to destroy us.
Yeah. Okay, there's another point about the genetics of whites, is that they tend to be, so to speak, whole societies. They're not just a little specialised subgroup like Jews are. And a whole society doesn't need kind of plodding people. It's not a very polite way of putting it. I mean, if you're a shepherd, for example, you've got to be, you can't just let them die. You've got to be, have a sort of awareness all the time, which actually struck me as a similar sort of temperament to people who look after banks of data. You know, I remember watching a YouTube video on the storage of, well, of YouTube. I think it was their own data storage, and they showed this chap who was kind of patrolling up and down these aisles. And of course, most of the time they're okay; the little lights go on and off. But every now and then there's a kind of emergency, and they have to swap things. And that's it's the same temperament as being a shepherd, and you also have to have builder types who are not clerical. They're not intellectual. They don't have a sort of theoretical view of what they're doing, but they can, through practical experience, they get the things worked. And of course, you've got a whole society like this. They're all different types, and this does fragment whites. And so, of course, that gives Jews an opportunity to do their stuff. I mean, here's an example in the military. Why, this is a white bloke. He says he's talking of persons of colour. I forget what the expression is they use. He says here they love the military. They get free housing, free healthcare, free food, easy jobs. The SPICs don't go for infantry. They do supply or food service or accounting or human resources, which is why military pay or paperwork is constantly fucked up. And but the majority of the front line is white. Yeah, and the the niggers and spics who the white guys have to deal with when they're trying to get their missing links covered. Well, anyway, that's true enough.
Is that a quote from somewhere?
Yeah, it's taken from some chap in YouTube, and with approval. And I've said, oh, this chap's got it exactly right. But the point is that the whites are, they kind of shade into fanaticism. There are lots of YouTube comments where these people are proud of being, you know, militaristic, and they don't care what the enemy is. You know, they haven't got the sense to think out the enemy is. I mean, for example, the Vietnam War was against people who'd never done anything to harm Americans at all. But you get these sort of gum-chewing head cases who are perfectly happy that they, you know, raped Vietnamese women and burnt other ones to death, because there's a kind of stupidity about whites which Jews can play on, particularly when they control language, media in different countries. You know, in Germany they have anti-British stuff. In Britain they had anti-German stuff. And
the other thing that they do, I mean, like you read a comment there from YouTube, and you know, they're becoming so egregious. They're actually getting people to make comments like this in countries. You know, if you were to make a comment like that on a YouTube in the UK, you could get prosecuted. If you did a Twitter post like that, or if you did a Facebook post like that, they'll come after you if you use the language like the N-word, etc. Whereas in countries like America, and I think that this could be why they're allowing this sort of to pass with the alt-right in America, because if people see, if kids in the UK that get involved in the alt-right see comments like that on alt-right sites, etc., then they think that they can do the same, and then they do it and they get arrested and jailed and what have you. I think that could be another aspect of why they're, although of course they have the First Amendment in the USA, they've used other means of cracking down on this sort of speech with their affirmative action, all that sort of stuff, other ways of protecting the what they refer to as the minorities that they brought in themselves.
Yeah, that's right. It could be a trap, that's true. The other thing I was going to say here was that, of course, there's a thing about individualism that's particularly popular in the US, and it only occurred to me recently that, of course, if you want a city built or a whole country, you get all these people thinking they're individualists, and they go out and, of course, they've got things like, you know, saws and hammers and the ways of building things. So they've got a basis. They're not individualist in that sense. They don't have, don't invent stuff as a rule for themselves, but they're used by Jews as a sort of cheap way to build cities. And then once it's built, then they can flood, then they can invade it themselves and flood it in. So a lot of these individualists are actually harmful without realizing it. And they're also credulous. Another aspect of being a specialist is that people are credulous outside their own fields, which is a very sad thing, really. I mean, for example, I don't really like saying this, but I've got a very good piece on my site about salt as an essential part of diet, very important. And but the chap who gave that to me, it was his idea in the first place, although I added a few important pieces to it. He tells me, you know, that the earth is flat and that
You just have to take aspects of what people say. I mean, I always say with my guests, I don't, you know, I invite them on for their views. It doesn't mean I agree with everything that each of my guests say, but I bring my guests on because, you know, that's the purpose of an interview show. Otherwise, I can just read from my book every day and my views. But what you say about salt is interesting because I'll get onto that later, if that's okay with you. We've just to let you know, we've only got about just under 10 minutes left. We can overrun slightly, but I'll hand back to you.
I think what I'll do is I'll overrun and make my own thing from that and leave you to edit the rest if you can be bothered. Anyway, I was going to say another aspect, of course, which is unique to human beings, is writing. Once these things are made permanent, you can have writing, and you also have imposed rules. And then, you know, like in the Talmud, and I think if the Talmud had been, well, it seems to have been the case that it was imposed on the Khazars, doesn't it? The Khazar theory. In other words, if you have a thing like that and you impose it from the top, presumably, onto the Khazars, after a few generations, all the people who dislike it are sort of killed off or have tiny families or something. So it can, these rules can sort of spread by, in a self, you know, even if ancient Jews are completely died out, if the Talmud exists, it's still possible to generate the same sort of people. So, I mean, that's something that's unique to human beings because of ideas being made, being frozen in writing. And this is, let me just go back here. There's, in my view, which some of your readers might not like. I don't want to, and I'll soft pedal it. The Jews, well, as you were saying, they have this repetitive thing. They keep repeating the same thing, and it isn't what's called Holocaustianity now. And in my view, if you look back at the founding of Christianity, the same sort of thing must have happened. There was a sort of primitive Christianity, the beliefs of which, as far as I know, have been lost or, you know, destroyed. But when the Jews got onto this idea of Christianity, they invented all their own stuff, and they just kept on and on repeating it, and eventually captured the Roman Empire through a sort of bastard, you know, poor quality emperor. And so they imposed stuff, and I think, you know, Christianity was largely controlled by Jews, although it developed its own momentum, of course. I mean, you've got the Greek version, there's the Greek Orthodoxy, which lasted much longer than the Roman one. And of course, there are also these other orthodoxies like Finnish and Hungarian, I think there is, and Russian, of course. And I think the same thing happened with Islam. I've got stuff on my website about this, that when Jews were felt their grip was loosening by the time Islam was invented, I mean, all the Romans had been plundered completely and everything was kind of ruined. So they invented Islam and made it suitable for what they wanted was a sort of army of thickos who would carry out their instructions.
Well, I think it's interesting because you brought up the Russian Orthodoxy and what have you, and all these other Orthodox churches that are Christian, you don't get them running around worshipping Jews, saying Christ was a Jew. You get the main Judeo-Christian problem comes out of America, praising Israel. You have to bless Israel, otherwise God will curse you and all this thing. It was the Jews that invented themselves as the so-called chosen people. That's why in Israel today they don't call themselves Israelites, they call themselves Israelis. They put all these things out in plain sight. And again, I think that by their fruits ye shall know them. And you've listed a long litany of their fruits earlier in this show. And that's my view on them. And my interpretation is there are deviations of Christianity, I think, that go right back. But when you actually look at the way that they behave, they certainly don't behave in accordance with any of the 759 laws, statutes, ordinances, judgments for breaking those in the Bible. They're constantly behaving against it. Even if you take the Ten Commandments and you go through it, you can show that their policies pretty much go against everyone. What's your thoughts on that?
Right. I tend not to worry too much about the history of these things because it's so difficult to disentangle the truth. So I don't really have an easily expressed view on that kind of stuff. I was just going to go on to say that there are other Jewish fronts, like the Jesuits, for example, and also the Quakers. That's out of Miles Mathis. Miles Mathis made a very good point about the Quakers being Jewish things. This was at the time of Cromwell, and Mormons are another one. So they've imposed these things very often, and of course once you've got some control, then you can sort of sit back and kind of manipulate it. By the way, let me just make a note on usury here. I think if you look up usury, I think in its strict sense it's not just interest, it means usury proper is where if you default, or if you can't pay the thing back, then all your goods are defaulted. There's a thing in Shakespeare about it, for example. So I think usury is not properly understood, and I include in that Mr. Hoffman, who's good on Jews. I think he's got this usury note wrong. So I think that, in fact, let me just make this point as well. There's a tradition that Christianity was opposed to usury, and you get these papal bulls thundering against usury, or at least that's the image. But if you actually look at Christianity, they had, I mean, for example, in Lincoln in England, there's a Jew's house just down the road from the cathedral. And in London, there's Westminster Abbey and so on. There's also the Jewish old Jewry is fairly nearby. So I think, in fact, there was a double act there. The Christians, in effect, gave Jews the monopoly in usury in exchange for being being allowed to rule over the plebos. So I think that's an aspect which has not been gone into.
I agree with you. The white race had to let these people in because we know that the king kicked them out in 1290. So at some point they were let it back in by either naive or corrupted white people. So I don't excuse these individuals. But obviously we see, and you mentioned people like Tony Blair. I don't believe he's Jewish, but he's quite happy to do their bidding.
Yeah, I've seen a conspiracy theory that he's the sort of spawn, the illegitimate son of one of the Rothschilds. I saw quite a convincing teeth match, of them.
That's interesting.
It's just one of these things. He's just obviously he's just a kind of patsy, isn't he? It amuses me when he's sometimes presented as being a serious politician and all the rest of it. Let me segue into just revisionism generally, or what I call revisionism is anything really that involves looking and checking at things. It could be in science.
I think we're going to have to wrap up because we've only got about a minute or so left. We can overrun by a few minutes, but if you want to overrun by a few, but we can't really go more than sort of another 6-7 minutes.
Do you mind if I carry on right to the end and just use that as a separate thing? I mean, you could put the second half in another one, couldn't you, or something? If you like, let's expand this one.
Yes, so we just had a little chat off air, Ray, because I know you've got a lot of information to present, but what we can do is have you on a separate show to do that. And so we covered a few topics today. I know the next one you want to get into is revisionism, so we can do that in the next show. And, of course, people can go to your website, big-lies.org, and they can find all sorts of information. It's probably the biggest homepage I've ever seen with all sorts of links on it. Can you give your closing thoughts, your closing statement to the listeners, and then we'll wrap up the show?
Okay, there are just two important things here that I've discussed. The first one is just identifying Jews and separating them out from your own interests. In other words, spot the Jew. I've tried to do that. Spot the Jew. And the other important thing is genetics. Try to work out why it is that Jews do what they do and why whites do what they do. These are the two really important issues that should be understood. If you can understand this, then you understand quite a lot of the modern world, and that's presumably the object of the exercise.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, Ray. And
I was going to say thanks for having me on your show.
Excellent. Well, as I say, thank you so much for joining me, and you'll be welcome back to continue the research that you've presented. I want to thank everyone for listening. I'll be back with you all soon, and bye for now.
You have been listening to the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show on TBR Radio, brought to you by the Barnes Review. Andrew's book, The Synagogue of Satan, is now available on his website, andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com, in an updated, expanded, and uncensored edition.